Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radio Lab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radio Lab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, and you think the Pope drew crowds? New York once had a visitor from overseas who got over half the population of the city to greet him. I'm talking about the subject of my next guest's book, The Marquis de Lafayette. And all right, that means about the same number of people as got free tickets to see the Pope drive through Central Park. But on a percentage basis, no one has topped him since he returned to the U.S. to mark the 50th anniversary of its founding, the Marquis de Lafayette. Sarah Vowell joins me now to talk about her book, Lafayette in the Somewhat United States. And as you can tell from the title, she again brings her inimitable take on American history that you may know from her appearances on This American Life, or her books like Assassination Vacation, The Partly Cloudy Patriot, or The Wordy Shipmates. Welcome back to WNYC, Sarah Vowell.
Good to be here, Brian.
And of all the historical figures we never think about anymore, why the Marquis de Lafayette?
Well, I mean, like you said, he was just so, he was so beloved, I mean, and for good reason. I think, you know, when he came over here in 1777, he was this 19-year-old kid who came over to volunteer. I mean, partly because he wanted an adventure like all 19-year-olds. And also the British had killed his soldier father in the previous war, so he had a little bit of a grudge, you know. And even though he was this aristocrat who, you know, came over from Paris and Versailles, he really just kind of rolled up his sleeves and pitched in and endeared himself to Washington and the men and ultimately the American people.
We'd like to think about George Washington and them, but I think people forget that the war was won in large part thanks to the French fleet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we would be speaking English right now if it wasn't for the French, you know?
We're certainly not doing that.
You know what you need to win a war is you need gunpowder and soldiers and, you know, equipment and cannons and mortars. And Washington was sort of lacking in a lot of those things. So when the French, when the treaty with France was announced, the poor soldiers at Valley Forge, the ones who had lived through the previous winter, yelled, "Long live the King of France." And by the time the French troops come over and help Washington at Yorktown, there are more French people at fighting at Yorktown than Americans. And that was the deciding factor.
And it was evidence of that 1824 Lafayette mania at the Freedom Fries moment when France's role in winning American independence was already was so forgotten that got you on track for this book. That is, at the beginning of the Iraq War when everybody was disparaging France.
Yeah, I mean, I happened to be in the Berkshires during all of that, and I was at Melville's house, you know, where he wrote Moby Dick, and one of the things on display there is the dress Melville's wife was wearing as a baby when she was presented to Lafayette, and they held on to it all of these decades. And that sort of got me researching the return trip and ultimately led me back to the war.
So what was the return trip like from your research, this triumphant return to New York City in the 1820s?
Party every night. I mean, just to put it in perspective, I think it was something like 4,000 people who met the Beatles when they landed in 64, you know, and that was in a city of 7 million. So when Lafayette returned, it was like a party every night for over 13 months. And I mean, that was sort of what drew me to the story, not as much him, but just the American people's mania for him. And I think because at that point he was the last living general from the Revolutionary War, and because he was French, I mean, the country at that point was already on the road to civil war and so divided, especially between North and South. But because, you know, he was French, he belonged to all of us.
And New York Lafayette, Lafayette Street in Manhattan, Lafayette Avenue in Brooklyn, which is just next to DeKalb Avenue, and the Kosciuszko Bridge, all foreign recruits to the Revolutionary War.
That's right. I mean, so many of these foreigners, I mean, partly they came over because they were out of a job. You know, Europe was at peace, and all of these professional soldiers were looking for work, and that's why von Steuben came over and trained the army at Valley Forge, and it's why, you know, Lafayette came over because France was at peace, and he came from a long line of soldiers stretching back to the Crusades and Joan of Arc, and the only way you can get battlefield glory is, you know, in a battle.
It does help to be in a battle to get battlefield glory.
Yeah. So, well, you know, because it's pledge drive.
Says Sarah Vell, who is the author now of Lafayette in the somewhat United States. And I don't know if there are any of you listening right now who have a question or your own favorite Marquis de Lafayette story. 212.
Yeah, your own favorite Lafayette town.
212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.
I mean, if you have a favorite Lafayette town in Wisconsin, you're going to have to be more specific because I think there are three or four of them.
Really? In one state?
Yeah. I don't know how that works for navigational purposes.
And he was able to tour the country 50 years after the war that he fought in because he was a teenager when he left his aristocratic friends and family to join up, as you said, at the age of 19. So he could come back 50 years later and take a victory lap. And I guess your favorite line of his is, I did not hesitate to be disagreeable to preserve my independence.
I mean, that's kind of, I keep coming back to that line. He says it because his fancy father-in-law gets him a really boring job with the French court, and he wants to be a soldier, so he is rude to the King of France's brother and gets out of that job. But it sort of speaks to, like, one of the kind of through lines of the book is how much rancor there is in the American past and present. I mean, so much of Lafayette arrives in, so much of the founding moment is involves a lot of bickering amongst the founders. The Continental Army and the Continental Congress are often at odds. I mean, even the Continental Congress, one of the congressmen talks about how all we do is bicker, we waste a bunch of time. I think he says we murder time, which I think we can all identify with. But I forgot what the question was.
Well, in the road trip part of the story, as you said.
Oh, that's where I was going. It's like you read my mind or you read the book.
maybe
like,
both.
While I was researching this story, I mean, I was so drawn to him just because he was this person everyone loved. And that's so rare in this country. And I thought I would take a nice little vacation through this story. But then when I was researching it, it happened to be during the government shutdown of 2013. So, like, a lot of the historic sites I was trying to visit, you know, battlefields where he fought, Independence Hall, were closed down. So it's really hard to celebrate the, you know, inventions of Independence Hall. This government focused on the separation of powers. Like, it's hard to do that when the lights are off in Independence Hall, you know.
Here's a story from a listener who wrote in. Just last week, I visited the Samuel Van Saun House in Wayne, New Jersey, where I live. The Marquis de Lafayette headquartered there in the spring and summer of 1780 after the brutal winter for Washington's troops in Morristown. At the same time, George Washington was staying about a mile away in the Day Mansion. And you spend a fair amount of time in New Jersey on the road trip part of your book.
That's right. I mean, you know, the big battle that happens after Valley Forge, after our German friend von Steuben helps train the troops, the next big battle is the Battle of Monmouth, which was basically a draw, but that was an improvement over some of the other defeats before that. But that's the moment when Washington, you know, you remember the big moment of the New York campaign, the debacle of the New York campaign, and Washington yells, "Are these the men with which I am to defend America?" But by Monmouth, I think he can ask that question and be more or less happy with the answer.
Let's see, you're doing a book event in Brooklyn at Book Court.
That's right.
Tonight at 7. That's not on Lafayette Avenue, though, right?
No, it's pretty close. You're always pretty close to a Lafayette something in this country.
And you write about how your take on history is not so much as someone who studied political history, but art history. So your research includes chatting with the Lafayette reenactor at Historical Williamsburg and with Quakers who are unhappy that you're writing about a war at another reenactment. So your subject isn't so much the person Lafayette sometimes, but the prism through which we choose to view him and his fellow patriots of the time.
Let me write that down. That was pretty good. I mean, one thing about studying art history instead of political history, I think it leads to maybe more compassion, you know, especially with the founders, especially with someone like Jefferson. You know, how do you deal with Jefferson and all of his contradictions? I think if you come up in the arts, you're used to your heroes being a bit dented. Like, especially in art history, the most you can hope for in your heroes is like a garden variety philanderer. So like if you're a feminist who loves Gauguin, it kind of sets you up to deal with these founders, especially the ones who believed so much in liberty and freedom while, you know, enslaving some of their help.
Let's get a call in here from what some people call the Windy City.
Oh,
what,
yeah?
I will call
heard of it?
The land of the enemy Cubs. Hi, Janet in Chicago. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Janet.
I'm a fan. I was wondering if you had seen Hamilton on Broadway and what you thought of the portrayal of Lafayette in the musical.
I have seen Hamilton. I think of all the Treasury Secretary musicals, it is definitely my favorite. the Lafayette in Hamilton is played by the dreamy David Diggs, I believe is his name. And I think he really captures the kind of joie de vivre of Lafayette, though he does have much better hair than the actual historical figure. But, I mean, I loved Hamilton. Have you seen Hamilton?
I was in New York 2 weeks ago, and I saw it. And I cried the whole time because I love all the Founding Fathers, but especially Hamilton.
Especially Hamilton? Yeah, I guess you would have that in common with the creator of Hamilton. I mean, sometimes during Hamilton, I was like, there's an awful lot of Hamilton in Hamilton, you know?
Well, I had just read your book, and so it was such great timing because I read it, and then I got to go there. I was like, there they all are. I just read about all of you.
Yeah. Well, it's nice. Or you could just paint a picture of them in your mind through reading.
Thanks, Janet. So do you envy, as a writer, someone like Lafayette who can write with no irony to his wife, the welfare of America is intimately bound up with the happiness of humanity. She is going to become the deserving and sure refuge of virtue, of honesty, of tolerance, of equality, and of tranquil liberty. Boy, talk about American exceptionalism at its birth.
He did write that on the ship on the way over. I mean, yes, I am envious of that. I mean, I actually think of this show kind of lives out those ideals more than just about any place that I can think of. But, I mean, I do talk about how, for me, I call it the file cabinet. Like, there's a file cabinet blocking my view of that country that he envisioned, and it's where the government keeps all the, like, Indian treaties and the Chinese Exclusion Act and, you know, everything we feel bad about and every betrayal of those ideals he was fighting for. But I still think they're worth talking about.
And on that note of ambivalence and hope, we will have to leave it with Sarah Vowell, who will launch the publication of Lafayette in the Somewhat United States, which somehow Janet in Chicago read in advance, I guess, tonight in Brooklyn.
She didn't pay for it, I bet, Brian. You know, I've got to make a living, Janet.
Book Court at 7 p.m. That's 163 Court Street. Sarah, always great. Thank you.
I love being here, Brian. Thank you. I mean, I really do love this show.
Oh, thank you. And I love you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come. We will talk about words rising in the presidential season with word watcher Ben Zimmer next. Stay with us.